We're good to go, John. You know, welcome to season four of The Protectors. I love catching people off guard. John was just, one of my biggest pet peeves, and it's not John's fault. It's not really anybody's fault, but a lot of times we use our regular computers that we have our emails open. And like, I'm deaf as a doornail, and I hear the beep, and I'm like, oh, I got an email. So I'm always like, while we're in the middle of a conversation, I'll be like, is that my email? So John is good to go. John, you have an incredible background, and you're doing a lot for the community. And I really wanted to have you on a show to talk about EOD. I want to talk about your background. I want to talk about your nonprofit. I want to talk about school shootings. And I definitely want to talk about how we could help the community out. But John, welcome to the show, man.
Cool. I appreciate you having me, Jason.
Yeah. You and I, what was that? Like 2 years ago, we linked up in DC.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was almost 3 years now.
Holy shit. Yeah. We linked up over in Starbucks, over at the Trump Hotel.
Yep. Yep.
Got our coffee. Talked about our mutual love for knives and bladed weapons.
Yeah, books and guns.
Books and guns. And
yep.
My mantra has gone from you can never have enough knives, hats, and guns to now it's knives, books, and guns, because I think I have too many hats, but I can never have too many books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have stacks. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Who's your favorite author, man? I want to throw some people under the bus right now. Who's your favorite author right now?
Right now? Geez. That's a tough one. That's, I love Jack Carr. I love Andrews and Wilson. I love Mark Greene. I mean, those guys, Brad Thor. I mean, that's my wheelhouse right there. It all started with probably as a little kid, probably started with, Don Wilson and the Mac Bolan series.
Yes.
That kind of got me into it, and then transitioned to Tom Clancy and, along the way.
You know, the more I think about Mac Bolan, the more I think about he's more in tune with what we're reading now than. Like Clancy was very macro level down to, and he would take it from the macro level all the way down to the operational level. But Mac Bolan was just a badass going around doing badass things.
Oh yeah.
Didn't he have the bread in 93 R's? Was that his big deal? I think it was. I think he had the auto 93.
Yeah. I read a lot of Mac Bolan, the other one. What was the other one? Phoenix Force.
Yeah.
That was really good too. That was years ago.
I know, man.
I have those books somewhere in a box. I got to find those. That would be great to crack those open again.
And I'm going to throw myself under the bus right now. I'm staring at it. I was supposed to send you an advanced reader copy of Andrews and Wilson's Dark Angel, but it's sitting on my desk. I absolutely, everybody out there, I love getting mail, but I hate sending mail.
Oh, I feel you. I'm terrible at sending mail, but
it's going to get there, brother.
Come on, man. Hook a brother up.
Talk about some genuine dudes out there in the writing community right now. You know, Andrews and Wilson, Jack Carr, Don Bentley, yeah. All of them, man. You can just like ping them and they'll be like, oh, yeah. What do you need? It's really cool, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I met Jeff Wilson on Clearwater Beach. We met for breakfast and got to talk a lot of books and stuff. Amazing guy. Just a real dude that was, just. His background was amazing. Just was a super cool guy. I met him out there after we were doing our for my nonprofit. We met after our board meetings and stuff, and just an awesome guy.
What is your nonprofit?
It's the United States Bomb Technician Association. So we're basically U.S. based public safety bomb techs and U.S. military EOD. And our primary mission is supporting the active bomb techs of the U.S.
How'd you get into that, man?
So I've been with the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office here in Colorado for almost 26 years.
Wow.
And started out in the jail. And, like every young guy, wanted to be SWAT. And, you know, because as a little kid, that was my favorite TV show as a little kid, was SWAT. But one of the guys who was my mentor in the jail, he was a former bomb guy, and saw the announcement come out, and I was I was the first and only guy in the history of our sheriff's office to make the bomb squad from the jail. So that was in March of 1999. I made the bomb squad. So obviously a month later in Colorado here, we had a pretty infamous incident. We had the Columbine school shooting. I guess luckily or unluckily for me that day, I was testing for our patrol division. So I didn't respond that day, but you know, we had, had three bomb squads and an FBI agent that worked as one bomb squad. And they did some real hero stuff that day. But you
bring up Columbine and that's the first, when you said you're in Colorado, and you and I have discussed kind of your background before, and I was just kind of asking those questions just for the audience to know it. But, you know, when you talk about Columbine, you think about they had IEDs. They had the improvised explosive devices out there. Oh, yeah. Can you kind of go into what the ages before the internet was mainstream, where you could go and you could Google how to make an IED. And this was pre-9/11, so it was like, hey, you know what, we're not going to learn off of the enemy and how to do this stuff. But what did those bomb squads encounter?
So those guys, they encountered a lot of pipe bombs, a lot of crickets. So like the crickets were CO2 cartridges filled with basically pyrotechnic powder with cannon fuse. So that was the bulk of the devices they saw. Luckily for everybody on scene, the first responders and everything, those guys were, for lack of a better term, they were really crappy bomb builders. You know, the more sophisticated devices they built were not successful in detonating. They had some devices set off for some of the first responders in their cars. They had some devices that they were shooting in the cafeteria that they were trying to make detonate. They were propane devices. I guess they were just lucky. There could have been a lot more dead.
I can't imagine being a tech or even a first responder walking into that scene and seeing the carnage, the dead children, man. Because that's like my biggest fear, being a dad. And I know a lot of these first responders, a lot of the PD and the bomb techs, the sheriffs, everything going in there, seeing that and knowing a lot of them probably come from the same community.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That must have resonated with your partners and friends.
Oh yeah. I mean, that the day of that shooting, I mean, both my cousins went to that school. I mean, that school was less than a mile from my mom's house. I mean, that hit home for a lot of people. You know, there was a 1,000 cops there that changed the environment of school shooter response, active shooter response, you know, for what a tragedy that it was. So many good things came out of it, you know, active shooter protocols, tactical medics, bomb tech, SWAT integration. You know, some of those things took a little longer than they should have, but a lot of good things came out of that tragedy. But I think there was a lot of good lessons learned. So
I can imagine what the AAR would have been like, that the after action review, yeah, and using the lessons learned and putting it together. Because, you know, to me, I think, okay, you're a bomb tech out in Aurora. Do we really need bomb techs everywhere? I mean, you always think big cities, you know, speed and all the other crap. You know, there's not going to be a lot of Dennis Hoppers out in the middle of Aurora. Right. I'm shining a light on a situation because, man, I can't even fucking imagine Columbine and those scumbags and just, God.
Yeah, I mean, there's, between everything, there was around 100 devices. So
holy shit. I was thinking like the only ones I remember were those propane devices that you see them trying to shoot. And I didn't realize there was that many devices.
Yeah. Cause their pockets were filled with them after they had killed themselves. Their pockets were filled with them. They had devices at their houses. They had a diversionary device that they had let off before. the shooting started over on the street Wadsworth that was to the west of the school. So there was a lot.
I know, you think about the 1970s, you think about the bombings all throughout, using pipe bombs and everything, every other type of IED. And then you don't really think, I don't recall a lot of attacks like that where they have like 100 devices. I mean, these kids must have been preparing for a while. So, I mean, we don't think about indicators back then. Now, where, you know, parents are supposed to be like, you know, looking for threat indicators, which they still miss. But yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was, and, you know, back then there was a lot of things missed, and the parents, you know, the parents missed a lot of things. You know, it sounded like there was a book and everything.
Made no.
But you know.
Well, you move on from that too. As you move on, and you mentioned the theater shooting, and you can imagine any time you have an active shooter post Columbine, that there's going to be some sort of explosive devices.
Yeah.
So as if, like, when you're coming up on a scene like that, I mean, EOD now is at the forefront of a lot of these active shooter responses. So, I mean, what was your involvement with the Aurora?
So with the Aurora Theater shooting, I was the first bomb tech on scene. And so when I got there, I mean, there was still, they had probably taken the shooter into custody 20 minutes or so before I got there. It was still chaos. They were setting up their command post. There was, you know, cops and people everywhere. It was, you know, when I got there, I saw some cops that I knew from other agencies, and they were telling me, you know, they knew I was there for the bomb stuff. And they're like, hey, we have a suspicious vehicle out front. You know, we think there's another vehicle that was a Ford Explorer, you know, over to the kind of northwest of the theater that they thought had an IED in it. So, you know, I'm immediately, you know, trying to figure out what's going on and how to attack that. Went to the command post, and that time my commander at the time, he had just shown up too. So I was like, well, I'm going to go handle these immediate threats. You know, I'll get these handled. So I grabbed the guy that knew where they were, went and took care of those, cleared those immediately. So, there were still, you know, people running around. So yeah, there was a life safety threat there, and just basically ripped open windows. And cause I found out those stupid little knives with the little window punch thing.
Yeah.
Don't always work. So, was able to wedge my fingers into the window and rip the window out. So I went full gorilla mode on it.
Yeah. And if anybody's ever seen John in real life or even on video or anything, or if you're listening to right now, there's something about EOD people. I think you're supposed to just like lift to be cock diesel all the time or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I like to pick things up and put them down. So it's, I guess when you're, you know, you try and be strong. And when you're wearing a big bomb suit and stuff.
Was there explosives at that scene?
There was not in the theater. There was they initially, when I got on scene, there was the guys that took him into custody. I talked to the one sergeant who was with the guys that took him into custody, and he said that he was mentioning something about booby traps in his apartment. So we were talking about telling the responding guys in our neighboring agency in Adams County to start heading over there, and that there was a threat there. So to start handling that. And so, you know, I thought there was a high probability that there might be something in the theater where he was shooting, because that's just, you know, going off the Columbine model, that there's if where there's a shooting, there's usually IEDs. So, you know, until we prove that there's not, you know, we're going to treat it as there, if there is. So they sent me in to clear the theater.
Now, are you all kitted up when you go in?
Just with my tactical kit. So my helmet, my plate carrier, and some hand tools. So I went in with a couple of Aurora Aurora guys who were on scene, and they covered me basically while I did a methodical search of the theater, the bags, the bodies, the, you know, all around the theater itself, you know, trying to avoid the rivers of blood. It was just the most intense scene you could imagine. You know, cell phones going off. You're wondering if,
oh man,
you're wondering if, you know, part of it, you know that people are trying to find their loved ones, and other, you know, as a bomb tick, you're thinking, is somebody trying to trigger a secondary device, or so it's a, your mind's going in a couple different directions, and you're trying to just stay on task of, let's make this a good methodical search so these guys can hold the crime scene and get this job done. And
I give so much credit and kudos to the EOD techs and everything else like that. One of my really good buddies is retired Army EOD and multiple tours and stuff. And I could just imagine, it's not just the pucker factor. It's the observant factor, what you see post blast, what you see, so much death and destruction. And is that the reason you kind of jumped into the nonprofit world to say, hey, you know what, we got to help these people out?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things that kind of pushed me in that direction. You know, it just felt like there was a void we could fill. A guy I came up with on the bomb squad in my agency, he had left and gone to the federal side, and he and I got together and felt like there was some training voids we could fill by working with the EOD industry, the equipment industry, and partnering with them, and really just trying to give back to, ultimately the guys who still go down range and make that long walk, because, that's where the focus should be. And, for me, my priority was always to never leverage our membership as far as the tier one members. We have a tiered system as far as our membership. The tier one members are the guys who are active bomb techs. And for me, I made the promise early on that I was never going to charge those guys for any of our training events. If you can get to our training events, then all you got to do is get there. It's all of our events are free. So, we work on different funding streams, whether it's grant money, whether it's, we work with industry to partner with them. But, I'm never going to leverage our membership for financing. So that's really important.
Yeah. And that's one thing about the organization too, is it's, you know, there is a ton of tactical training out there. There's a ton of former operators, a ton of this, a ton of that. But when it comes to like something so specific as explosive devices and how much they are different in different locations. So you got the pipe bombs, you got very rudimentary up to technical. And this is the kind of stuff that you need to really be on top of.
Yeah.
So where are you pulling in trainers in? I'm sure there's so many prior military, so many TTPs learned.
Well, and our training events are somewhat unique. So we try to stick with like technology training events. So we'll bring in industry. And so we'll do our training events, we call them technology training expos. So each company or technology partner will get a training lane. So whether it's an X-ray company, whether it's a robotics company, whether it's, you know, that type of industry, will get a training lane. So they get to show off their technology. The bomb techs get hands-on training with their product, get to push its limits. They get to learn that product. They get to push it to its limits. And then so the companies get end user data. They get feedback right there. They also get to put their product in the hands of the end user. And so if they have an awesome product, the end users are like, this is awesome. They can take it back to their shop and say, hey, tell the money people, say, hey, we need this product. And, or if the product is lacking, say, hey, if you guys this, or you know, hey, your product sucks, or if your product only did this, because bomb techs, we're like Swiss Army knives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're good at a lot of different things, and we're really good at making our own tools. So that's where it's good to get these products in front of bomb techs, because they may give you some different ideas on how to make your stuff better. And, you know, ultimately, I don't care if these guys are really making money or not. I just want to make our community better and safer. And that's...
Listen, it's a profit-driven industry. We know that. That's the truth. Sure. And the reality is, I mean, the good idea fairy is great. But unless you have like really good R&D, research and development, and you have people who have done it and walked the walk and taken that long walk, it's really like, you know, I always tell this story. When I was in Iraq, I was attached to CJ Sotif, the Combined Joint Special Operations Task Force, as our anti-terrorism force protection dude. And right before I got there, they did a purchase order for like $2 million worth of explosive detectors, handheld ones. And I trained up on them. I was supposed to teach all the ODAs and everything how to use them. And they were like the biggest worthless. They were trying to take over the role and responsibility of a canine. And this is 2006, and it just, the technology was not there. I don't know if it's there now. I don't know if they have any handheld devices. I don't even recall what the name of that company is. I'd rather forget them, because the bad thing about it was the contractor who came over there to give them to me to give out to the ODAs and the Naval Special Warfare guys, just, he was a former EOD guy, and he's like, yeah, we're trying to get it to work. And I'm like, you had to lick the little swabs, and it's like you're not even swabbing anything. You're supposed to be trying to pull in the particulate matter. And you're like, it's not really. You can't. Sometimes you just can't beat a canine or just someone's eyes and feels, right?
Yeah, that seems like it's a scary prospect when you're in theater.
I don't know, man. And well, do you have a lot of prior EOD guys coming over to the force, over to the sheriff's department?
In some areas we do. For us, we don't seem to get that much, but I know some agencies, I think, that are closer to EOD bases and stuff, they do. But there's so many federal jobs that seem to get more, because the federal preference and everything, they get, it's an easier gig. They usually pay pretty well, and there's so many contracting gigs for EOD guys, and that seems to be a bigger draw.
Well, you guys are doing some stuff right up the road. And before we go on with that further, I do want to tell people to check out the United States Bomb Technician Association, USBTA.us, and you can get involved. You could donate. You can see what kind of training platforms are out there. Because I know we do have a lot in the EOD community that do listen to this. Maybe you're former, prior, whatever, and you just kind of want to see what's going on. Check it out. But you do have something going on in Maryland right up the road here soon.
Yeah. We're getting ready to open our technology campus, which is super exciting. We built this technology campus outside the gates of the base there in Indian Head, Maryland. It's basically a first of its kind technology campus for really a nonprofit. We're really trying to change the landscape of how industry is working with the end user. So we've got industry partners that are going to partner with us at the technology campus, so they can bring in, bring in training events there. We'll put on training events there. You know, we've got DOD partners that are interested in, doing contract stuff with us there. We've got federal partners that are wanting to do the same thing, putting on training classes there. So it's a super, super exciting, super stressful.
I'm sure.
My partner Sean he runs the business side of the association, and he's been working his tail off getting this all set up. And
you guys are right up the road from me, though. I mean, that's like, straight lines 21 miles, but driving times, you have to jump over the river and stuff, is like an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's super exciting, but that's we're going to do our ribbon cutting on May 13th, so it's going to be a really, really cool
May 13th, I might have to take a road trip out there. Protectors on the Road. That's right around the corner, man.
It's going to be an amazing project. And we're almost to the point where, I mean, we haven't even opened the doors yet, but it's almost to the point where we need to expand already. So that's good and bad. but we're super excited about the project, and you know, that's where we're.
What do you want people to know? That's one thing I never ask. I always forget about that. What do you want people to know about being EOD or supporting the community, or just something that just people don't realize?
Well, I mean, I've always found it funny with our community is, you know, we've always been super secretive about, you know, what we do. But kind of the longer I've done it, it's like, we can tell people our stories. You know, it's, our public safety bomb techs, EOD, we've done some amazing things. You know, it's okay to tell our stories, get our stories out there, you know, publish what we do. You know, there's a handful of people that have told our stories, but it's like, you know, Hurt Locker was terrible. you know, the guys who know the job and everything, that everybody's just like, oh, is it just like Hurt Locker? No, it's not. But okay. Yeah, it's because I had so many people wanting to join the bomb squad after that movie came out, and they're like, oh, is it just like that? I want to join the bomb squad. I've seen that movie 10 times. It doesn't work that way. So
no.
Cool. But yeah, you won't do well in the assessment.
I do want to tell people that, you know, I am part of a racing team. It's called After Action Racing, and it is created by ex-bomb techs, ex-EOD techs and stuff like that. And one of the big stickers on it, the hood is like After the Long Walk. It's really cool, man. Mm-hmm. I do. If you are in the EOD community and everything, check out After Action Racing. And I should really link them up with you guys, get some stickers, put them on a car, start promoting all these bomb people out there, the real ones that are about to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really good groups out there. I mean, EOD Warrior Foundation, you know, we're partnering mm-hmm. with them. We work with them a lot. We've worked with some, you know, we've done some joint events out here with Gold Star Families, and you know, I can't say enough good things about them. There's, you know, Nicole and Greg, and they've been phenomenal partners of ours. And honestly, they've kind of helped us as a startup nonprofit, you know, kind of given us advice along the way, since, you know, we're only 5 years old.
Yeah.
So,
and you have to get the good, you have to be, if you're not a legit nonprofit, I can't deal with it anymore. There's too many money grubs out there. And that's why, like, I'm trying to avoid discussing nonprofits with ones that I don't know personally anymore.
Yeah. I mean, really we just put all our focus into the wire cutters and the guys that go down range. And, you know, we try to put on good events, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback. You know, we have a flagship event every year in Orlando, Florida. It's a top bomb tech competition it's a singleton competition where we have public safety and EOD techs competing against each other.
That'd be cool.
And it's awesome. We get great feedback.
So who wins?
So it's been different every year. So we finally had our first public safety bomb tech win this last December, which was really cool. Michigan State Police guy, he did awesome. But the first three have been military EOD guys, with public safety guys coming in second and third. And it's been a phenomenal competition every year. We're just trying to make it better every year. But the guys have a great time. They're good, you know, good challenging events. There's like, I think there's 10 events that they compete in, including a written test, which is incredibly hard. You know, it's not centric to EOD or public safety, but it's got some tough physics type questions.
Sure, man.
When I went over the test, it made my brain hurt. I might have had an aneurysm. But, you know, there's, you know, booby trap lane, x-ray interpretation lane, rigging lanes. I mean, it's so much fun. The guys have a great time.
Oh, I'd like to go see that.
Orlando in December, you know, the, the weather's
Orlando, great. December. The Protectors taking a road trip.
There you go. Come on.
I gotta go down the road here for 20-30 minutes, hour probably.
There you go.
I'll tell you, I'll go to Orlando. Anybody out there wants to bring this Protectors down there, just give me a heads up.
Heck yeah.
I really appreciate you coming on the show though, man. And I really do want to ask you these are pretty critical questions here. You have the choice between what is your favorite fixed blade and your favorite auto opener.
So right now,
you got to be critical, man, because if they're listening to this, I'm going to be boom. John, you're vouching for this.
I know. Well, right now in my pocket, I have a Microtech.
Okay, Microtech. I got one of those somewhere.
So
I think I got the. Is that the one I got? No, mine doesn't have the serrated blades, but yes, Microtech. I'm there with you, brother. I will vouch for Microtech.
That's kind of my auto opener. That's my that's the one.
And Microtech is not sponsoring the show, but if you are LEO or military emergency responders, they do have an awesome discount program.
Nice. Fixed blade. That's a tough one. I have a few that I really love, especially on the digging in the dirt.
Okay.
Well, EOD side.
I'll let you go with just the Microtech. I'm the same. I need a new fixed blade.
Yeah,
I do. I had a Stan Wash Knives one, but I ended up was raising money for the racing team and ended up giving it away for a giveaway. But we did raise like $7,500. So it was worth it.
Nice.
But I do need a really good fixed blade. So if anybody out there has any suggestions for a really good fixed blade, I like handmade ones.
Yeah.
I love them. I don't really like the production model type stuff.
The top of my wish list is a half face blade.
And oh yeah, they're nice, man.
I'm hoping to do that as a retirement gift for myself. So if any of my buddies out there are listening, you know, they can pitch in and help me get a half face blade for my retirement gift.
I have 296 days. So if anybody's out there wants to give me a retirement gift, I'll take one of those as well.
I'm jealous. I got 22 months. So,
once I hit 50, brother, I'm doing a road to 50 right now. So if anybody wants to join me, I'm trying to get in fighting shape, trying to get motivated. I am motivated. I want to do new things, man. That's why I did this lever action course the other day. I want to do some more shooting, writing, and just talking shit to people like you, John. That's why I'm glad you came on the show, man.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, I want to do some more writing myself and finish that book I've been working on for 2 years. So
there is no want to. You're going to do some writing. Start short stories, brother.
Well, I got like 2/3 of the way through it, and I lost half of that on something with I got screwed up on my computer or something.
Was just devastated. As Rambo would say, even if you lost it, nothing is over. Nothing is over.
That's right.
Okay, brother, get writing, and I really appreciate it. We will see you in May, and I'll see you in December. And everybody, check out the U.S. Bomb Tech Association.
All right, brother, thanks for having me on.